Cue the fancy intro music. This is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom gives you the tips, tools, and resources you need to define and achieve success on your own terms, so you can make great money doing what you love and have the time and freedom to enjoy it. I'm your hostess with the mostest, Lisa Robin Young. Let's get started. In my hometown, there's a concrete pump house situated between the train tracks and a T intersection by one of our high schools. It appeared back in the late 60s. I say appeared like, you know, poof, there it was. But it was built to fix the drainage issue when the federal highway system lowered the grade of the road to put in the new interstate. Inside it, all the storm sewers in the area join up to pull the runoff water underground and away from the roadways so that the streets are clear so that you can get to the school. I'm pretty sure it's a defunct building now because the hatch on top has been painted shut for decades. Couldn't get into it if you wanted to. Although, some folks have tried. And there are still a few citizens of the town who have gone in there at some point in the past and lived to tell the tale. We call it The Rock. Some people call it The Block, but we call it The Rock. And we called it that long before Dwayne Johnson started wrestling in the 90s. It was first painted by students of that high school. SWP, oh yeah! That was the very first thing that was ever painted on that block, and that was the start of over 50 years of community building through vandalism. The location of The Rock makes it perfectly suited to be a billboard or a graffiti canvas for the community. The train tracks are actually higher up on a hillside, so the hill makes a great backdrop, and The Rock sticks out like a sore thumb, this big concrete block building, on the landscape. So people go out there almost daily and sometimes more than once in a single day to paint a message for the community. Our high school theater department would paint The Rock to announce the show dates for our next production. People would paint The Rock to commemorate a special event or memorialize the untimely passing of a loved one, or even as I once did, to make a political protest. And we used to joke that The Rock must have originally been only a few feet wide, but years of painting had made it ginormous. A few years back, several inches of paint actually peeled off the rock, revealing layers of work from years past. And the rock is so popular in our town, it has its own Facebook page. And I'll post links in the show notes so that you can see what I'm talking about. So the question of the day is, how does a rock get its own Facebook page? Well, the rock has raving fans. People so deeply committed to what it stands for that they want to share it with their audience. Raving fans are your evangelists. They buy from you, but they also bring with them the support and rapport of new audience members that will get you faster traction and even greater income. But most importantly, your raving fans will help you share and disseminate the message and make the impact that you are trying to create with your brand, with your business. And not everybody is gonna be a raving fan. I mean, I've mentioned before how I like some of Shania Twain's music, but I am not a raving fan. I like what I like, and I can give the rest a pass. Not everyone will like you either. Even our rock has detractors. One of Flint's previous mayors thought it was an eyesore, and he tried to make it illegal to paint the rock. It probably really is illegal since it's like federal property or something, but like he wanted to make it illegal. And he had even had city workers go out there every few days and paint it brown. He was in the habit of painting everything brown to cover up graffiti. And that only made people want to paint it more. So, you know, former Mayor Williamson, he had issues. Anyways, in the city of Flint, Michigan, our rock has become a celebrity of sorts. And being a celebrity in your niche doesn't happen by accident, but it does happen all the time. For many creative entrepreneurs, a profitable, sustainable business isn't exclusively driven by money. As our rock clearly illustrates, you can be famous and not wealthy. Now, sure, money is great. It's pretty dang awesome, in fact. It pays the bills, helps you afford the lifestyle and the treats that you want. But for most creative entrepreneurs, it's about more than money. It's about the impact that your business can create. And probably at least a little recognition for the gifts that you have and the work that you're bringing to the world, right? Raving fans help you cultivate the celebrity status you need to generate that kind of impact. But how do you turn your audience into raving fans? Whether you're just getting started with maybe a few dozen people on your email list, or you've got an established brand presence with tens of thousands of followers on social, there are some simple things that are going to make it easier to turn your audience, whatever size it is, into raving fans. And before we jump in, you're going to want to grab your handy dandy raving fan building checklist from our learning library. It's free to join the Rising Tide and get access to all the downloadables from every episode, not just this one. So pop over to the website, creativefreedomshow.com, click the Rising Tide link and either sign up or log in. This is season 6, episode 9, and your checklist is there waiting for you. Rick Barker, a local here in Nashville, was Taylor Swift's original manager before she blew up on the scene. I heard him recount a story once where Taylor told him that she wanted to sell 500,000 records. And then he told her, if you want to sell 500,000 records, you got to meet 500,000 people. And Taylor would stay late after shows, sign autographs, and generally connect and build relationships with people who came to see her. Some of those folks bought her records. Some of them fell in love with her and bought everything she's ever made. And some of them just took her scarf and dumped her, in a manner of speaking. But you don't see Taylor trying to win over the hardcore metal audience. She's not hanging out backstage at every Five Finger Death Punch show to shake hands and make friends. She's staying in her lane, in her niche. And yes, she's even changed niches from country to pop, something that a lot of people said was a bad idea. But I think she's doing okay with it, don't you? When you stake your claim on a niche, you're not closing the door to opportunities. Instead, you're opening the door for the right people, your people, to see you, know you, and support your business. Taylor's raving fans loved her as a country artist, and they still love her as a pop artist. And the rest? Well, the rest don't matter. Here's another example. Not everyone wants to be a little monster, but Lady Gaga's diehard raving fans are more than delighted to identify themselves as such. To them, it's a term of endearment that brings them deeper into Gaga's world and gives them a sense of feeling a more intimate connection to her. Meanwhile, Mother Monster's global brand is marching along, creating a roughly $320 million net worth as I record this, more than double from 2 years ago. During a pandemic, y'all? Just saying. So if you haven't already done so, niche down. Find your genre, so to speak, and own it. Get specific about who's best suited to your offers. Who will get the most out of working with you? Who gets the biggest wins, has the best experience, and will just eat up whatever it is that you're offering? We're looking for the best of the best here. Sure, you can serve a lot of people, and you probably will. Niching doesn't preclude other people from showing up and buying from you occasionally. Remember, I buy Shania Twain's music sometimes. But you're not building out your body of work for the one-time looky-loos. You're building your body of work for your raving fans. Who do you want to be giving your best to? And once you've got some clarity on who the best of the best are, don't talk at them, talk to them. Rick Barker didn't say you gotta wave at 500,000 people. Nope. You've got to meet 500,000 people. And if 500,000 feels off the mark for you, then scale it down or scale it up to fit your goals. The number isn't as important as the context. When you meet someone, you don't just wave at them, you engage with them. Hey, how you doing? What's your name? Oh, did you enjoy the show? Oh, where are you from? None of this is deep conversation, but it's important and it's meaningful to your raving fans. The first time I was stopped in public, I was attending somebody else's workshop. As I walked down the hall towards the conference room, I heard this squeal, followed by somebody shouting my name. And she came barreling down the corridor to meet me. I stopped and I said hello, and she introduced herself. And I recognized her name as somebody who had been on a teleclass I taught more than a year earlier, back in the day when we did a lot of teleclasses. And her face lit up like a Christmas tree because I remembered her. And we hugged and we talked together as we walked down the hall to the conference room. And since that time, we've become friends. But can you imagine how different that would have been if I'd kept walking and just waved at her when she came squealing in my direction? Like, whoa, oh my gosh, Lisa Robin Young, whoa. Hey, and just kept walking? Nah, that we would not be friends. We would not be friends. So you see how this plays out on social too. There's an engagement hierarchy, as it were. Think of how you engage on social. First, you scroll. That's non-engagement. That's what Facebook calls reach. That content reached your eyeballs, but it wasn't worthy of engagement. Then there's the scroll stop. You've managed to find something that got you to stop long enough to consider it. Maybe even read it or consume it. And then you've got liking someone's post. Very little effort required, very little engagement, but it's better than nothing. That's like waving at someone in real life. And the hierarchy of engagement goes on from there, but you get the idea. The more time and effort you invest in the engagement, the deeper the connection. Like, short comment, save it for later, a GIF reply, public shares, long comments, researched comments, private peer-to-peer sharing. It gets harder and harder as you escalate the investment in engagement. But if you want to sell a million records, you need to meet a million people. And that requires an investment of time, energy, resources. So you can't, by necessity, try to engage with everyone at the same level, thus picking a niche and owning it. Then make your audience feel comfortable, known. Create a space of safety for them. I call it strong castle and safe harbor. The castle is your body of work. That's what they initially come to you for. But the safe harbor is what invites them to stay because they feel safe with you. Now, that doesn't mean you can't post the random picture of you and your sister eating beignets on your first trip to New Orleans. That's also part of connecting with your audience. It shows them that you're a real person with a life outside of your business. But what it does mean is that if you have niched down and researched your audience, you can also connect with them based on what they like, what they want to see, and what you two have in common. The shift from talking at them to talking with them or to them creates intimacy, or a deeper level of intimacy than where you're currently operating. And that's why you hear marketing people say, talk to one person, create content for an audience of one. That one person is your raving fan. Will other people pay attention? Sure. You won't alienate anyone because they'll feel like you're talking right to them. Now, when you talk to them, speak from your heart, not from your book of sales tactics. And I've said this a zillion times before. As a creative entrepreneur, your business is an extension of who you are. You are not your business, but your business is a part of you. You can't just put it on the shelf at 5 p.m. and punch out for the evening. It follows you like Mary's little lamb. Everywhere you go, you're either being inspired or inspiring others. So then it makes sense to be genuine in how you engage with people. Good day, bad day, whatever. Yes, include a call to action from time to time where it's appropriate, but don't expect that every piece of content you create has to be selling something. No thanks, not interested. Now, what about creating audience engagement when you sell something that doesn't really sound all that sexy or engaging? Well, in the last episode, I talked about the clever way Progressive Insurance captured attention with a book on Amazon. And if you missed it, pop back and check it out because it was very engaging and shareable. It was content marketing at its best. But since you're not Progressive, let's get granular and dissect it here. Your business is a personal brand and inevitably tied to you or your message, or more than likely the face of your brand or the face of the movement that you're creating in the world. That means your values and those of your business probably overlap if they're not identical. So start there. Share those values. They drive conversation about who you are, what you're about, and the way you do business. The reason Progressive's book works is because they're speaking into the values, beliefs, and behaviors of the people that they consider their right audience. And so those people see that and they get triggered, but then they're still like, oh my gosh, that is so me. That is so great. Oh my God, I love this. This is awesome. Let me go share this. Okay. It's insurance, y'all. Insurance. We're called Creative Freedom for a reason. Freedom is one of my company's core values, as well as one of my own. Freedom from the hustle and grind. Freedom from doing work that you hate. Freedom to define and achieve success on your own terms. Freedom to own your dreams without selling your soul. It's something that I say in every single episode of the show. Freedom is also one of the highest values for many of my clients. More than 40% of my clients have some kind of a capacity constraint that makes it impossible, literally impossible, for them to do the hustle and grind. They're dealing with chronic illnesses, multiple marginalizations, aging parents, day jobs, or other issues that mean they simply cannot run their business in the typical 40-hour work week way. The other 60% realize that living on the hamster wheel of hustle is a zero-sum game. And that's why we talk about making great money doing what you love without having to sell your soul to do it. Is there a time and a place for compassionate hustle? Sure. When you're trying to meet a deadline or you're in the final minutes of the game, you don't want to hold anything back. Leave it all on the dance floor, as it were. That's when you give it your all and push hard. Those last few feet, those last few inches, that's the extra oomph you need to get the job done and done well. That's what I call compassionate hustle. The occasional need to stay a little later or work a little harder to get the job done. But you can't live there. It's not sustainable. And that's part of why freedom is such an important value in my company and for my audience. Your values drive the conversation and also the way you do business. Your audience connects with those values and the stories about them. Your raving fans join in those conversations and share their viewpoints, and they share those conversations with their circle of influence. And they tell two friends, and they tell two friends, and so on, and so on. And I'm probably dating myself using that reference, but that's okay. People connect with and become fans of businesses based on the values that are portrayed in their messaging. Now, let me say that another way. People connect with and become fans of you based on the values you portray in your messaging, in how you show up in the world, and what you say and what you don't say, and how you act. It's all messaging. Now, you can use this knowledge for good or evil. If you're here, I'm really hoping you're using this knowledge for good. We've all seen cases of folks saying what they think the world wants to hear and showing up the way they think the world wants them to show up just to win over a crowd of adoring fans. They portray a certain set of values and beliefs to their adoring public, but then behind closed doors, they're completely different. I can think of more than a few people that this could describe. So yes, it's true. Your messaging can be manipulative, but think of it this way. If you're wearing a mask, pretending to be something you're not, people are going to fall in love with that mask and not the real you. Not the you that's been craving the spotlight, that wants to be seen, that needs to be spreading the message and sharing the great work that you're bringing into the world. Then what happens? You begin to resent the brand and the business that you've been building because you can't be yourself in it. Worse yet, you get found out and you start losing the favor of the audience that you worked so hard to manipulate into following you in the first place. So it's a no-win situation, frankly. And that's why I say, be yourself, warts, sparkles, and all. Let them love you for who you really are, or let them move on. What if people don't like me? Some people are not going to like you. That's just life. So if people are not going to like you anyways, be you and let the people who do like that like you, love you, want more of you. Here's another example. Ben & Jerry's ice cream. It's undoubtedly good, or they couldn't have stood the test of time. But there are a lot of good ice creams out there, but why should I choose Ben & Jerry's over Häagen-Dazs or any other brand? Sure, they've got some fun and funky names for their flavors. Sure, they use fun and interesting colors and marketing copy. But all of that is inspired by their brand values. They run their business on those values. Have you seen their brand values? I'll post a link in the show notes for complete details if you're curious, but if you pop into their website, you're going to see that the company's core values are focused on human rights and dignity, social and economic justice, and environmental protection, restoration, and regeneration. That's how they come up with the quirky names like Justice Remixed, as well as how they source their ingredients using something that they call values-led sourcing. That means they choose to use cage-free eggs because they value environmental protection. They source fair trade ingredients because they value social and economic justice as well as human rights and dignity. They've made choices about their products and offerings that align with the values that they want the world to know that they stand for. It's that whole be the change you want to see in the world in action. Ben & Jerry's is saying, this is what we stand for. This is what we care about. And there are lots of companies that care about those same things, but not many ice cream companies are talking about those values. And none of those ice cream companies are Ben & Jerry's. They are unique in their market, even in a market where there are infinitely more than 31 flavors or even 31 brands. So your values are a key part of the buying decision in a world where there are infinite choices. Sales trainer Jeffrey Gittimer famously said, all things being equal, people want to do business with their friends. And all things not being equal, they still prefer to do business with their friends whenever possible. When your business decisions and your audience conversations are values-led, then doing business becomes more sustainable because you're already likable by your right audience. Your raving fans will remember and resonate with your values and stories, turning you into their go-to, that celebrity in your niche with the impact, the income, the recognition that you deserve. If you want to sell a million records, you got to meet a million people. But they can't be just any old people. Pick your niche. Talk to and build relationships with your audience. And speak your values into the world. They'll start listening. They'll start responding. And ultimately, they'll be falling in love with who you are and what you're about in the world. That's how you start turning your audience into raving fans. Thank you for helping us make a bigger impact in the world. We so appreciate our sponsors, our patrons, and every like, share, tweet, follow, and review that you give for Creative Freedom. We're still one of the fastest growing shows for creative entrepreneurs because of you. So thank you. Next episode, I'm sharing the 5 signs that tell you it's time for your business to make a pivot. Taylor Swift did it. Maybe you should too. We'll talk about that next time. So be sure you're subscribed to the show to get notifications about our upcoming episodes. I sure hope we'll see you there. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you end the hustle and own your dreams without selling your soul, see, I say it in every episode, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.